Hello, my friend. Welcome to my studio. What's inside the Louvre? We spent two full days wandering the rooms and hallways of this enormous palace to bring you the most beautiful treasures from this incredibly rich art museum. Enjoy. We spent two full days in the Louvre, or about 15 hours walking its lavish interior space, filled with priceless art, jewelry, ancient sculpture, and furniture. The length of this famous art museum is remarkable. It covers over 60,000 square meters. Just imagine walking 652,000 square feet. The Louvre's art collection is even more impressive, as this top art museum houses over 35,000 works of art spanning from ancient Egypt to the 19th century art. Yes, the Louvre is most famous for its Mona Lisa, Venus de Milo, Michelangelo's Dying Slaves, and Canova's sculptures and David's paintings. However, the palace displays so many other incredible pieces of art that I'd stay there for weeks to sketch and paint from this famous art if I could. Welcome to Hooked on Art podcast. My name is Veronica Winters, visionary artist and book author. I appreciate your interest in my work. If you enjoy the podcast, please support my efforts by giving it a 5-star review and sharing the episode with your friends. Now let's get back to the show. So origins of the Louvre begin about 12th century. Construction began on top of a fortified castle. And in the 16th century, King Francis I transformed the castle into a luxurious royal residence inspired by Italian Renaissance architecture. The king hired Leonardo to be his court artist in the last decade of the artist's life and commissioned the Mona Lisa, among other pieces. When Louis XIV moved the royal court to Versailles in the 17th century, he left the Louvre as a royal palace for occasional visits and storage of art collections. During the French Revolution in 1793, the Louvre transformed into an art museum as it was declared a museum of the people. In the 19th century, Napoleon expanded the Louvre's collection through conquests and purchases, making it one of the world's largest and most prestigious art museums. Emperor of France made significant expansions of the art collections. A century later, the Louvre underwent extensive renovations and expansions. There was a lot of reconstruction and also additions to art collections during the 19th century. Royalty were very interested in the archaeology, and the 19th century marked the spot when they went out to dig, the sites. For instance, this French scholar deciphered Egyptian hieroglyphs in 1822, and he founded the Egyptian Museum in Turin and the Egyptian collection in the Louvre, basically because he convinced Charles X to purchase the Egyptian artifact. Another French archaeologist rediscovered the place buried under the sand in the 19th century and brought the artifacts into the Louvre. So today we can look at the wall sculptures that represent the Assyrian Empire of King Sargon II. The winged victory was also discovered by another French archaeologist. And the Venus was brought to the Louvre by the French ambassador to Greece. So there were a ton of archaeologists and, you know, a royalty who made a lot of discoveries in the 19th century. And that's one of the ways how they expanded the art collection. There were also many purchases during this time. And obviously, you know, the kings of France collected art and commissioned many paintings to the famous contemporary artists of the day. There were many renovations inside the museum during Napoleon III's reign, and one of the most beautiful rooms in the Louvre is the Napoleon III apartments. You must visit them even if you are short on time. In 1861, these rooms became the apartments of Napoleon III, Minister of State, and these opulent rooms in red, gold, and crystal chandeliers were used for various receptions, balls, dinners, and meetings until 1870. Obviously, it's an opulent room, and it's almost impossible to focus on anything in particular. But look at the red chairs. They have different designs, three-seater armchairs that zigzag. They seat several people at once to have conversations, as opposed to the chairs that seat just two people to have private conversations. Thanks so much for being a subscriber. Visit veronicasart.com to see new art or gifts and to subscribe if you wish so. Another stunning room is the Apollo Gallery with French crown jewels collection. Being just 23 years of age, King Louis XIV aligned himself with the ancient Greek god Apollo to become the Sun King in France. So he hired the best artists of the day, including Charles Lebrun, the first artist to the king, to work on one of the most beautiful rooms in the palace after it burnt in fire. And a number of famous artists worked on the Hall of Mirrors in the Versailles, and they worked on this space as well. And Lebrun created a whole journey of God Apollo in a series of ceiling paintings, so don't just look at the French crown jewels, also look up and see the art. Eugène Delacroix received the commission to decorate the ceiling centerpiece of a 12-meter-wide painting, and today it's the original is hanging in a different room. So this is a beautiful gallery, and it houses a royal collection of some 800 hard stone vessels and the French crown jewels. François I, King of France from 1515 to 1547, established the French crown jewels, selecting 8 pieces of royal jewelry that were to remain the property of the monarchy. And King Louis XIV, who reigned between 1643 and 1715, added more items to the collection during his reign. And so after that, the collection just kept expanding. So today you can admire natural beauty of precious stones and artistic achievement captured in a crown of Louis XV, and a crown and diamond brooch of Empress Eugenie, and so on. And personally, I visited the Apollo Gallery room twice because I just needed to go back and look at everything without my camera. And to get beautiful views of the palace, you can purchase something at the local cafe and eat outside. Okay, now let's look at the Ancient Egypt art collection. The Egyptian art collection at the Louvre primarily came about three main avenues: Napoleon's conquest, 19th century acquisitions, donations, and purchases. During his military campaigns in Egypt in 1798, 1800s, Napoleon and his troops discovered and plundered numerous ancient Egyptian artifacts. These treasures were then brought back to France and eventually housed in the Louvre. The 19th century saw a surge of interest in Egyptology and, leading to numerous archaeological expeditions and discoveries. Basically, other European museums did the same thing. And also, over the years, the Louvre has acquired Egyptian artifacts through donations and numerous purchases from antiquities, dealers, and art collectors. Today, the museum houses over 6,000 works spanning 5,000 years of Egyptian history. The frustrating part is that everything is not in one place. The collection is spread out in different parts of the palace, which makes it a little bit difficult to see at once. To house the Egyptian collection, some rooms were redone into the Museum of King Charles X. The architects linked nine rooms together with high openings and decorations. And these are very beautiful rooms. They were painted by famous French artists of the day. So you must look at the walls and the ceilings as much as you look at the artifacts. And the most famous sculpture is Great Sphinx of Tennis. I don't know why, because there are several other beautiful sphinxes found in the Louvre. The Palace of Sargon. This is one of the most fascinating galleries in the Louvre because it displays the 8th century BC excavations of the ancient city and decorations and palace of King Sargon II. And these wall sculptures represent the Assyrian Empire of the king who built a new capital, Orsabad, the largest city in the ancient world, with a huge palace. Unfortunately, his city soon declined after his death on a battlefield, and French archaeologists rediscovered the place buried in sand in the 19th century and brought these artifacts back into the Louvre. And these are various sculptures in low relief and high relief, and they look gray or brown today, but they used to have color, mostly blue, red, and white. And these are protective genii. They watched over the city and its palace. These colossal winged bulls weighed about 28 tons each. And they are carved from a single alabaster block. And you can see that this style resembles the Egyptian art style. Gilgamesh overpowering a lion is a high relief sculpture that lacks original color but keeps its rough beauty. And you will also find some wall decorations from Babylon. Ancient Greco-Roman art collection. And this collection also spreads out across the museum. It's not like everything is in one room. If you're a fan of classical art, these are must-see galleries. The first significant Greek artifacts were acquired by French collectors in the 16th century, primarily through diplomatic missions and personal travels. In the 17th century, the Louvre began to acquire a small number of Greek antiques, often as part of larger collections or gifts from wealthy people. In the 18th century, the Grand Tour, a cultural pilgrimage to Italy and Greece, became popular among European aristocrats. So many of these travelers returned with collections of Greek antiques, which were often donated or sold to museums like the Louvre. The galleries dedicated to classical and Hellenistic Greece have several sculptures of Athena and different gods of Greece. Many of these sculptures seem to be, you know, original copies from the original bronze sculptures of famous Greek sculptor. I don't know how to pronounce his name in Greek, but he was a very famous ancient Greek sculptor who created many beautiful natural looking sculptures of Greek gods. The galleries with ancient Greek vases are located in a different place, the gallery Campana, and it's a long space of rooms with thousands of high-quality ancient Greek vases, cups, and other vessels. And these galleries have several famous vases, like Hercules stealing the tripod from Apollo, or Athena helping the hero win his battles, and many, you know, beautiful vases that I couldn't see in Athens. And we can thank French Marquis Campana, who was a super wealthy art collector who acquired these pieces. The Michelangelo Gallery. The Michelangelo Gallery houses the unfinished work by Michelangelo and Canova's masterpieces, among other Italian sculpture from the 16th to 19th century. Napoleon III ordered to redesign this gallery during the Second Empire in mid-19th century. Also, this space became like an open gallery for a prestigious annual art competition, the Salon for Sculpture. So here you can see the Dying Slaves, the unfinished work by Michelangelo that dates beginning 16th century. And Canova's art is remarkable. Some of it is on display in the Hermitage in St. Petersburg, but the Louvre also has beautiful pieces you cannot miss. Famous paintings. And obviously, we can look at some famous paintings. There are numerous paintings that belong in the art history books that you can find here. 13 famous artists in the Louvre. These are some of the most famous artists in the world, listed in no particular order. There are many more inspiring artists in the Louvre that I simply don't have space to include. So the most famous one is Leonardo da Vinci, who is number one. Personally, I'm not a big fan of Mona Lisa, but here you have it. It's a painting that's inside the Louvre, painted between 1503 and 1519. The official story is that the model is the wife of the Florentine silk merchant, Francesco del Giaconda. But that's the official story. There are rumors that the woman is a young Leonardo himself, because some believe that he was gay. And other theories include him painting a mistress of the Medici rather than a merchant's wife. Who knows, really? Leonardo created this and other rare paintings of his using this sfumata technique, which gives this soft and hazy appearance. Although the original colors of this painting were not brown, but vivid and colorful. Artist number two, French artist Eugène Delacroix. I actually visited his museum, which is located not that far from the Louvre, but the museum itself is not worth your time. The only interesting thing about it was his palette with colors placed on it. So his most famous paintings hang in the Louvre. And the most famous one is Liberty Leading the People. This painting depicts the allegorical figure of Liberty leading the people of France during the Revolution of 1830. And it's considered to be a symbol of the fight for freedom and democracy. Artist number three, Archimbolda. This is one of the most fascinating artists who painted portraits of people by combining different flowers, fruits, and vegetables into a face, which was highly unusual during his time of living, which was around 1520s, 1570s. So inside the museum, you'll find the four seasons, four paintings that have multiple layers of meaning. And the obvious one is the change of seasons, but the four paintings may also suggest the four ages of man: childhood, adolescence, maturity, and old age, as well as everlasting peace and abundance of the Habsburgs Empire, who commissioned the painting. The fourth famous French artist is Jean-Auguste Dominique Ingres. He's famous for his Vulpincon Bather that he painted in 1808. And this is one of my favorite paintings because it has a perfect balance between a sensual figure and beautiful folds of fabric. It's a well-constructed painting in terms of its composition. There is another famous painting by the same artist. It's called Odalisque. It has several versions, but this one is the best one. During the 19th century, artists were fascinated with the Orient and painted their ideas with the props from the Orient world. So here the artist shows his concept of ideal beauty captured in this woman, an imagined concubine in a Middle Eastern harem. Also, Ingres painted several versions of the Oedipus and Sphinx in the neoclassical style. The Wolters Art Museum has one of the versions. The National Gallery in London hangs one, and the Louvre has another version of this painting that you can see. Famous artist number five is David. It's also a French artist. David was the leading artist of the neoclassical art style, being admirer of Michelangelo and Caravaggio. David is famous for his large-scale historical paintings. His most famous ones, The Oath of the Harai and the Intervention of the Sabine Women, are on display in the Louvre. You can also view The Death of Marat, David painted his assassinated friend and French revolutionary leader Jean-Paul Marat. David was the leading neoclassical painter and supporter of the French Revolution. Being a member of the Revolutionary Committee of General Security, he voted for the death of French King Louis XVI. Marat had a skin condition, the pain of which was elevated by taking a long bath. So he was assassinated in 1793, and David painted Marat in a pose resembling the Pietà. And, you know, a gigantic painting by David is the coronation of Napoleon. I don't even know how he could have completed it. It's 20 feet by 32 feet. I think it's a remarkable feat to do this kind of work, and it's incredibly detailed and beautiful if you can see it up close. Also, David is famous for his portrait of Madame Récamier. It's an unfinished painting, and it's painted in neoclassical style, which is inspired by Greco-Roman art. And famous artist number six is Georges de Latour. The Carte Sharp is his famous painting. This is a French artist who became famous for his style depicting figures in a strong directional candlelight. And so he was so famous that many candlelight painters imitated his style. The famous artist number seven is Caravaggio, who is an Italian artist. And there are three paintings displayed in the Louvre: The Fortune Teller, Death of a Virgin, and a portrait. Famous artist number eight is Vermeer, the astronomer, which was painted in 1668. It's a very small and exquisite painting, depicts a scholar examining the stars, and is considered one of Vermeer's masterpieces. I love the quietness and natural light in his paintings, as well as the suggested detail and mysterious nature of the figures and environment. Famous artist number nine is Géricault. It's a French artist, and I'm sure that I mispronounced the name. Sorry about that. So his most famous painting is The Raft of the Medusa. It was a revolutionary painting because it depicted a controversial subject of the day. This monumental painting depicts the aftermath of the shipwreck of the French frigate Medusa in 1816 and is considered a masterpiece of the Romanticism movement that created much controversy during the painting's reveal. The artist depicted figures with stunning realism and movement characteristic of the Romanticism style. Famous artist number 10 has a very long French name, Trioson. Sorry guys, I cannot really pronounce it, but I love the painting, so I'm including it. It's titled The Entombment of Atala. This artist was one of the students of David. Atala chose death by poison to end her struggle between her faith and love for an Indian boy. It was a very influential painting among French artists for decades to come. It was painted in a neoclassical style with some romantic notes that led to the development of the Romanticism style in the 19th century France. And it's just incredibly beautiful, so well painted. The light shines on the figure placed at a diagonal. You can learn a lot in terms of composition and light by looking at this painting. Famous artist number 11 is a woman. Lee Brun is her last name. And famous artist number 12 is Titian, who painted the woman in the mirror in 1525. Artist number 13 is Paul Delaroche. He was an incredibly skillful painter. The Young Martyr is his famous painting hanging in the Louvre. The subject is of sadness, but I love how the artist painted the light on her face and water. And subtle gray-green colors of water are so beautiful that I can't stop looking at this painting. I am including a link to my article where I list all the artists and show the art. Please visit it. Just check out the link in the description of this podcast. I'm also including one more painting. It's incredibly beautiful. You need to see it. It's by Aria Schiffer, The Shades of Francesca da Rimini. The female figure is so well painted, and there is a lot of dramatic movement, light, and emotion captured in this painting. And if you have time, look up the Islamic art collection, because it's also very interesting. It has a totally different perspective on art and astrology, astronomy. You know, they focus on the use of pattern as opposed to painting a figure, for example. Personally, I find Islamic art inspirational as well. I always study their use of patterns and color. The artistic skill is just remarkable. And obviously, the museum houses enormous amount of other pieces of art and artifacts. It's just impossible to include everything here, but I'm giving you just an overview of these beautiful pieces. Also, if you have time to walk around the city center, you can go to the old art supply store. It's called the Senilier. It's a brand of high quality art materials and art supplies. And I just loved going there and, looking at old shelves and art supplies. If you're an artist, it's a thrill. It's located close to the Louvre. You can use Google Maps to locate it. And here are some views of the city. And I hope you enjoyed looking at these beautiful pieces, looking at art and the streets of Paris. And perhaps you'll decide to visit this city on your own in the future. Thanks so much for being a subscriber. Visit veronicasart.com to see new art, art gifts, and to subscribe if you wish so. I appreciate your interest in my work. If you enjoy the podcast, please support my efforts by giving it a 5-star review and sharing the episode with your friends.
See you next time. Take care. Bye-bye.